When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Movie Mastery, the podcast where we watch the movies that you want us to, and normally we would watch a movie from a giant list of movies that we have, and I randomly determine what we will watch from those. And they are all suggested by you, the listener.
That is what we do. That is normally what we would have done.
Now,
and you... we did. The end.
And on with the show. Now, normally, that's what would happen, and you would be able to get your whatever movie you want us to watch onto that list by contacting us at System Mastery on Twitter or on our Discord.
Wherever you do that.
If you want to get a hold of us and do that, you can do that, and it's fabulous, and it'll go on the big list.
It sure will.
Now, this time around, though, we did watch a movie that I know that you wanted us to.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't on a list, though, because this... is a surprise return, the triumphant, from the ashes, like a phoenix, return of In Theaters Now!
Yay, we're back in theaters, and you know, it was a very safe excursion because we were the only people in there.
That's right, we were the only two people on a Wednesday night at 5 in the afternoon to see Madam Web.
Madam Web. I mean, it's not really a surprise because the episode's probably going to be called that.
Yeah, I mean, if you just started listening to a podcast randomly and this was it, now you know it's a review of Madam Web.
Yay.
Wow.
We contributed $16 to that thing's box office budget, which means it's made $16.
I was going to say, we are a not insignificant portion of that film's gross.
I'm sure that someone saw that metric. Our attendance of that movie probably moved a needle in a Sony office somewhere.
Someone went, yeah, we're getting them.
We got them now.
We got them.
Quick, press the button. Celebrate good times. Come on.
Quick, press the button and re-release it like Morbius.
Or just re-release Morbius.
Oh, shit, people we are hit preparing. The re-release Morbius button.
Why do we still have that button?
Why did we install that button? We thought it was going to be so good.
Why do we even have that lever?
Yes, the Morbius. The Morbius for Cusco.
Designed specifically to kill Sony.
Sony's Morbius. Oh, Lord God Almighty. We watched Madam Web, and it was... not good.
Nope.
I will say it is shocking, and yet somehow I feel almost noble that Sony has decided to continue making movies that are superhero films that feel like they came out in 2000.
I appreciate this because
it's a period piece set in 2003.
Yeah, set in 2003.
And it was filmed like it was made in 2003.
Yes. Yeah, it really does feel that way. Like, they wanted the villain in this who looks kind of like the Spider-Man of 2003 era, in that they do a lot of physical, having him heavily jump onto things and so on, the way that Maguire had to do, because, you know, they were doing a lot more stunt work in those movies.
Yeah.
So he does have kind of a 2003 Spider-Man look to his moves. But also they do pepper in the occasional reference to remind you that it's 2003.
Yeah, apparently this was supposed to be in the 90s originally, because they were going to be like, oh, this is Garfield.
It's the Andrew Garfield, and then they decided to make it the Tom Holland at some point, and just kind of moved it to 2003.
And at that point, they were like, all right, we'll do some reshoots where we just have scenes where someone uses 2000s technology.
I think the problem is that 2003 is still wrong, because, I mean, we know exactly how old Spider-Man is in Civil War, and he's like... 17 it's not he's 17 or something, which means it's wrong for it to be 2003. I forget what it is, but maybe it's right because you know,
because he was like definitely younger than that, because he wasn't 15. Even like a senior yet.
Yeah, I guess that, you know what, maybe it's correct. I think I had read somewhere that it was still wrong, that they still hadn't quite figured it out, but whatever, it's fine. It means you get to hear a lot of like Meredith Brooks and
the Cranberries.
Yeah, the Toxic, the Britney Spears song, you know. Yeah. good times. And there's a dude with a PSP.
And a Beyonce album on the side of a building.
And so not the one you'd expect. It's like Living Dangerously or whatever that one was called.
So that way they can be like, look, it's 2003. Uh-huh. Sure. Fuck it.
That's all the references we have time for.
And here we go.
I mean, we're not going to do any of the other stuff that suggests it's 2003. Like, for example, there is definitely a part where Dakota Johnson teaches the three kids in the movie the modern incarnation of CPR and not the 2003 version, which I would know because that was when I was trained in CPR in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, not I was technically trained in the 90s as a lifeguard, but when I was at the Red Cross, I learned around in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And it was different than that.
Yeah. Well, you see, Madam Webb has the power to see into the future, and she knows, the future of CPR.
She stays on the cutting edge of chest compression technology.
Yeah.
I got the bleeding edge of it. Or there's a part where she just flies to Peru on one day's notice. And I feel like in America in 2003, you couldn't fly anywhere on one day's notice.
No, if you showed up and were like, you. I need to get out of the country right now.
Go to Peru. What's the first available flight to Peru? And they'd be like, I'm going to kill you like Kermit because your swag's too real.
They're like, no, hold on. Oh, yes, the flight is right this way into this room, please. And then they're just like, and all of the police ever.
Yeah. So there's some differences.
But I will say that this, God, I want to also preface before we go into the full spoilerific review. I have not read the Spider-Man stuff that deals with Ezekiel Sims, who is the main bad guy in this.
Yeah.
And is not a bad guy in the comics.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I thought he was, but I didn't really know that much about him.
No. Ezekiel Sims is basically like, I'm here to tell you all the new information for what the totem is.
He's spider totem guy. So his job is to show up and be like, that's my animality. Cool, huh? Isn't it?
He's just there to be like, well, let me bake your noodle with this one, boy. Was it the radiation that gave the spider the ability to give you powers? Or was it trying to give you powers and then died from the radiation? Oh, wiggity boo.
Okay. So he's the stick of where he just shows up to be like, there's a million things you don't know about being a blind crime fighter.
Yeah. I'm old Spider-Man and I got to tell you, you youngins don't know anything about spider totems.
Yeah, or like when you meet the cowboy version of Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Do we get this? There's a lot of movies that do this already.
So that's what he is in the comics. He is not that here at all.
No, he's a whole new thing here.
Yep. He is a thing that is an interesting concept and then not played with outside of like 2 minutes at the end of the film, which is what if Spider-Man was a horror movie villain?
Yes, which, you know, I don't even think that's that interesting of a concept. You know, that Brightburn movie did not make its money back. People are not as excited.
It was centered on that as the main character. If you were like, oh yeah, we're not centering on evil Superman. And also evil Superman is a concept that has been done 10 million times.
I guess evil Spider-Man has only been done 10 million times in comic books so far. And, you know, those Venom movies.
I was going to say no, because it's always Venom, and Venom's a goopy Spider-Man. He's not really evil Spider-Man.
That's true. You don't really have a straight up just evil Spider-Man most of the time.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, in the Spider-Verse movies, in which case you have a not evil, but misguided Spider-Man.
Yeah. And even then it's like, it's not a horror type thing with it. It's like, oh, he's just, you know, aggressive.
Yeah, he's too sexy for a horror aggressive movie. Yeah. So, all right.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because if I get some shit wrong about like Ezekiel Sims or Morlin or some shit, know that I never read those when those came out.
I would have strenuously objected to the existence of Ezekiel Sims had I been in charge at Marvel at the time, because they already had an Ezekiel guy. There was already Smythe, and we didn't need more Ezekiels.
Meh. Yeah, but he's Smythe. He's not Ezekiel.
He's Ezekiel Smythe.
Hey, he's Smythe.
That's his full name is Ezekiel, middle name Smythe.
Oh, middle name Smythe.
Bottom text.
We live in a society. Anyway, the spoiler-free review is it was very stupid.
It's really bad.
Also, Alistair Smythe.
Oh, it's Alistair?
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay. Alistair Ezekiel?
Alistair Alfonso Smythe.
Boo.
Yeah. Anyway, spoiler-free review is it was very stupid, and if you are the kind of person who is like, boy, I really love X3 X-Men United, then congratulations, they kept making movies for you.
Uh-huh. Very true.
So there you go. That is the spoiler-free review. We are going to play a little music and come back with the full in-depth spoiler review of Madam Web, brought to you by Pepsi Cola. Sorry, I'm not home, I know I'm walking in this battle. It's a new back, and it is time to talk about Madame Webb.
Yeah, let me just start by saying that all of the interviews you've seen of Dakota Johnson where she looks like she doesn't give even a shit is because she genuinely does not.
I mean,
like, even in the movie, she just does. Her line readings are all just like, whatever.
Oh, God bless. I mean, it's not where it starts, but like, one of the first lines Dakota Johnson has in this film is she is driving a ambulance to try and get someone who's like on death's door to the hospital. And it's, oh, she's doing sweet driving moves and she's got to deal with New York traffic.
Or Jersey, I think. Yeah.
And her line delivery when, like, Ben Parker, played by Adam Scott, is like, oh, we might lose her. And she's just like, she's not going to be room temperature on my watch.
Yeah.
just loses momentum on a already deadpan delivery.
Like, I know they don't shoot movies in sequence, but it's just really funny to have her, that be like her first line.
Oh, because that's why, you know, they don't shoot in sequence. That had to be one of the last ones. And she was like, I already know that this sucks ass.
I checked out. I need to get these fucking bangs out of my face, and I'm not doing this movie anymore.
Oh, good Lord, this is awful. I'm in charge, and we're gonna do it.
It's also just a lot of the rest of her lines in this movie are just that she doesn't. I don't know. Maybe that's just her own particular acting style, but she seems straight up checked out.
Oh, for sure. Most of this film, I'm like, the other people in it seem to at least occasionally be trying, and Dakota Johnson fully feels like she is like, God damn it. Like, just like, it cuts a scene and you can just imagine they had to cut right there because she turned to the camera and went, fucking really?
Yeah, like, you can tell one of her ears is redder than the other one because she had her phone pressed against her ear for the past 20 minutes yelling at her agent about this. But that's what's happened. Maybe she loved making this. I don't know. I just know that all of her line readings are weird.
It is wild.
It is very strange. But yeah, it doesn't open there. It opens with the
1973, you know, in the jungles of Peru.
Yeah, so we start with the origin story for Enchantress. Just tacked onto the front here, because, you know, Suicide Squad's part of this.
It's part of the Suicide Squad universe.
Yeah. I mean, not really, but her mom is in the Amazon jungle studying spiders, which, given how famous that line is, it's hilarious it's not even in the movie.
What?
From the preview, that when you saw the trailer for this, had the line where she was like, the Amazon, that's where my mother died when she was there researching spiders in the Amazon, or whatever weird line. and it's just like such a weirdly long, stilted line. And people have been asking her about it on interviews. And she's like, what? How else am I going to explain where she was and what she was doing at the time? And it's not even in the actual movie.
It is Peru, 1973, Constance Webb is looking for spiders that have sweet fucking peptides.
The peptides, you guys. Oh my God, these peptides.
These Pepsi-tides are maxed.
She just keeps saying peptides, because I guess that's the science buzzword we're using in the 70s here.
Oh yeah, she's like, oh, I haven't been able to find a live one, but from the corpses, the peptides on these things.
Yeah.
If I can get the peptides from a healthy one, who knows what we could do with those peptides?
Those peptides, you guys. Oh my God, those peptides. I'm losing my mind about peptides. And I get, you know, I appreciate that, because this is a double period piece. This is the past of 2003 going back to 1973.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nice that they didn't have her saying, like, they do later in a scene where she's talking to a doctor, have her say something like intravenous recombinant DNA technology secrets.
Yeah.
Which was like, oh, that's weird.
Odd.
It's 1973. She should have been like, certainly there's some manner of cigarette that can save my daughter. Camels? Newports? There's got to be an answer.
So Constance is looking for super spiders with Ezekiel Sims, who lets us know that there are Las Arañas.
Yeah, he gets saddled with that line. Where he's talking, and then she has to whirl on him and be like, oh, Los Arañas, the spider people, the people with super strength who get it from the spiders in the jungle, and they run around on the treetops and can go super fast and have the ability and have poisonous touches. I prefer to deal in science, thank you.
I don't believe they exist.
I do need to explain everything about them, though. And then get briefly kicked because she's 9 months pregnant and she's out here desperately trying to find a cure for a problem that we'll learn about towards the end of the film.
Yeah. right now, we just think, oh, she's pregnant, but out here looking for these spiders.
Yeah, because she's so callous that she doesn't even stay at home in bed.
Oh, yeah, she's like, this kid's trying to stop me from working, but I'm not going to let her.
Yeah.
Fuck you, kid.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, she doesn't like her baby and that then, isn't born yet.
And then she dies like 15 minutes after she says that. But apparently that line was recorded for posterity in her journal so that her daughter could spend the rest of, or most of her life being mad at her mom.
Yeah. She eventually finds the spider, and Ezekiel is like, hey, I have to give you one line about my backstory. I was in poverty and no one helped me, so I need a super spider.
Yes.
I'm going to kill everyone here to take the spider for money purposes.
Uh-huh.
He is, in the future, rich.
And he still has the spider, yeah.
No idea how him being Spider-Man gave him the ability to be a business Spider-Man.
Oh, he wasn't a business Spider-Man. He's just been pro wrestling, which is, you know, he would have been rich if Spider-Man had done, had he thought of that.
Had he the means.
Had he just been like, no, I'm not going to go out there and rescue my uncle or whatever. I'm just going to stay in here and keep wrestling for money. I have super strength.
He's my tiny wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestler for money. and he runs off and leaves Constance to die. But, oh, here comes Los Arañas!
Where they've got, like, red plant juice all over them and vines, so they look like tribal Spider-Men.
Yep, you got some real fucking Eli Roth-looking Spider-Men.
Yeah, Inferno Spider-Men.
Yeah.
Who do not save the other two people who got shot.
They don't, I mean, they show
try.
Up. Obviously, they're already dead.
I know.
They've been shot in the head.
Yeah.
She got shot, like, sort of in the near the womb, I guess.
Yeah.
So she isn't dead immediately. They're like, oh, we can try and save you.
Yeah.
But they also don't stop Sims.
Like, no, they don't even try to do that, even though he's got their special spider.
He has the special spider, and he just killed two people and shot another. And they're like, eh, it's fine. I know there's a whole-ass tribe of Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
But you can go. We need, I don't know, a dozen of us to lift this one lady back to our weird cum pool.
And we got
to
show you the worst special effects speed running you're ever going to see real quick. And then we're going to take her back to that cave where Trill are grown and on DS9.
Yeah, we're going to take her to the Trill cave.
Yeah, to the symbiotes.
And then she'll get bit by a spider and then give birth.
She'll still die, but now her baby will have messed up spider properties.
Radioactive spider properties.
Uh-huh. Put a hotel on that spider property.
I got four houses on spider properties.
That's what you want to do. You want to run up hotels first and then sell them down to houses so that people can't buy into the housing market.
Ah.
There are strategies to Monopoly.
Don't play it, though.
Uh-huh.
We then go forward to 2003.
Uh-huh.
It is 2003, and Cassandra Webb, going by Cassie for this whole movie, because, I don't know, why not?
That's fine. It doesn't matter. We do know that even though, you know, we never get a single mention of her dad. She's been in the foster care system and is now an ambulance driver.
Yeah.
And we never hear why she doesn't go to where, I guess he was dead in the first place.
Yeah. We don't know if, like,
he's just out of
the picture. Her dad was a deadbeat and, like, fucked off, leaving her mom pregnant or died or what.
Yeah, well, her mom got bitten by a impregnating radioactive spider. And so
she got bitten by radioactive sperm and it impregnated
her. Yeah, that's just how Marvel works, you know. That's how they roll.
That's the way they do.
Yeah.
But again, this is the scene we were talking about where she is driving through the streets of Queens.
It's Queens, yeah. And with Ben Parker hanging out in the back trying to help a lady and her just uninterested. And they keep trying to show stunt driving, but they don't seem to have the tools or the interest in actually filming that, so they just do a lot of, like, Liam Neeson getting over a fence style really quick cuts.
Yeah, just hard cuts of, like, we'll show tires and then another car nearby.
Yeah, and it's all this, the ambulance moving around underneath the same little stretch of elevated trackway for a subway line.
Yeah.
She doesn't actually go anywhere. It's very funny to watch. And at one point, because the movie wants to set up that everything's connected, man.
It's all part of an intricate web.
She almost hits Maddie Franklin, who I don't even remember which Spider-Woman that is.
I don't know, man.
But she's just like a little skateboarding kid who flips her off. So because we're going to establish that over the next scene, she's going to see all three of the Spider-Women that she's going to be hanging around with.
Yep. So she gets to the hospital to drop this person off. And it turns out the person she saved is actually the stepmom of Julia Cornwall in this movie for some reason.
Because her father is Julia, or is something Carpenter. So, yeah, that took me out of the movie.
I assume it's her mom is Carpenter, and she's like, oh, I'm with my dad and her new,
it's probably gonna,
his new wife.
Yeah, she's probably going to retake her mom's name when she, like.
Yeah, because the whole thing is she's like, oh, my dad and new family does not give a fuck about me.
Yes, so.
So instead of being Julia Carpenter, she's Cornwall.
I mean, for that to matter to anybody, you have to know that Spider-Woman 1's real name was Julia Carpenter, which no one remembers that character. Jessica Drew completely drank her entire milkshake.
Oh, yeah. And it's weird, because I was like, you have two things. Either no one's going to know, so it being Carpenter or Cornwall isn't going to matter.
Yeah.
Or you do know and you go, why the fuck is it Cornwall? You could make it Carpenter and it's not going to be people being like, ooh, I know a thing and you've done Carpenter wrong. No one gives a fuck about Julia Carpenter.
Yeah. I don't even remember what her powers are. I know they aren't the standard Spider-Man powers. And in this movie, they are very true to these three characters' actual power sets. You see them. You see Maddie Franklin in flash forwards where she's got those big
spider legs
and Carpenter shooting energy around instead
she's got little energy webs.
Yeah, so they do know who these characters are and everything. It's just a weird choice to have her go by Cornwall.
Yeah.
When the only thing that even the biggest turbo nerds are going to remember is, oh, she was introduced during one of the Secret Wars or Battle World arcs or something, and her name is Julia Carpenter.
That's the only thing I know about her, and you've changed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the kid, like, the kid from the actual marriage, not Julia, who is just sort of a stepdaughter here, the kid, like, oh, thanks for saving my mom, here's a picture, and we get a whole, like, oh, Cassandra Webb doesn't like kids, she doesn't want responsibility,
also,
or power.
Also, she doesn't really understand her ambulance driving is like, I'm a driver. I mean, yeah, technically I'm also a paramedic and everything, but I don't even think of the people in the back of my ambulance as patients. They're just cargo.
Yeah. Which is weird, given that they gave her the line delivery of like, she won't go room temperature on my watch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so
through the motions. She doesn't give a shit. It's perfect acting.
Yeah, that was a perfect line delivery because the character doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. She doesn't actually care if that person lives or dies. She just doesn't want to have to scoop a dead body out of the back
She's
of
like,
her
head. I just don't want to have that on my record.
I don't want to touch dead people.
That's more paperwork if someone dies in my ambulance.
I want to get driving out there again because I'm an adrenaline chaser. That's her whole deal.
But we also really establish a central character trait for Cassie Webb in this is that she has a real problem with both children and mothers and motherhood because her mother died.
Yes.
We know she went into the foster care system.
Uh-huh.
And yet know nothing about, like, any adoptive parents that she had. She apparently is just like, I hate my real mother for dying on me in the Amazon. Also, I don't know about my other parents.
Yeah, she may have never had any. She might not have been adopted. She may have just aged out of the foster care system.
Maybe.
So we don't know.
She does say at one point when she's talking to Ben, like, I'll walk the dog. He's like, you don't have a dog. I could adopt one. You know, I'll return the favor. So I was like, oh, you were adopted.
Oh, okay. That's fair. Yeah. I suppose that's true. But he's like, you're not going to do that. Because she basically has a fear of attachment.
Which is weird, because she also does have a cat in this.
Sort of. I think that's supposed to be a stray.
Yeah, but it also lives in her house. She has a cat.
Okay. All right. I didn't see a litter box. I just saw her giving milk to a cat that came in from a window.
Yeah. Well, the only thing we saw of her entire apartment was a kitchen table, and underneath her bed where a box is.
That's fair. That's fair. That's very fair. Very fair.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
Uh-huh.
Although she does have some fun lines when she sees the cat, though.
Hey, what up, fucker?
Someone must have been hungry.
Here's milk.
Here, though. Okay. Things are crazy. He's like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? It's like they're ADRing in lines that don't matter.
It actually, there was a lot of points in this where I was like, oh, did you cut lines in afterwards? Because there's a lot of points where it feels like they ADRed some shit in.
Because
they were like, oh, we gotta put more stuff
in. But they never explain anything. It's just every once in a while you'll be looking at the back of Dakota Johnson's head, and then a voice that's probably her says, like, well, now I have that to worry about. You're like, What?
What the fuck? Did you not have enough empty early 2000s, like, oh, I guess that just happened in your movie and you needed to ADR in more?
Yoink!
Oh, geez, I can't believe this is happening. Why did you need to put that in the movie?
There is that one line where she says she has to get home to watch Idol.
Yep.
So that's probably one of the very few times we reference any pop culture in this movie that isn't just Pepsi cans, which she spends so much time in this movie holding unopened cans of Pepsi in a way where it is pointed at the camera.
Yeah. In the scene, you know, where she's talking to Ben about, like, maybe I'll get a dog. It's because they're talking about going to a baby shower for Mary Parker.
The mother of Peter Parker.
And she's like, oh, I don't want to go. I'm going to get roped into stuff. I don't like babies or mothers.
She's right not to go to that party. What happens to her at that party is horrific.
Well, it's also like, why would you be at the party? It's like, hey, you're my coworker and friend from work. This is my sister-in-law's party for her baby.
It's her baby shower.
Why would you be someone that would be like, oh yeah, I'm going to bring you, and you have to be a part of it.
And you have to be part of the women half of this, because they immediately, the moment she gets there, she's like, hi guys, I'm friends with you guys, so I'm going to talk to you about burgers and so on.
Yeah,
because
like several of the co-workers that she has are there.
They're like, all like ambulance drivers or all these dudes. And then one of the women comes outside and is like, aha, a woman, come with me, it's womanly times for you.
Yes.
I'm Turner D. Century.
Which is weird, because I was like, but I've been to baby showers as a man, and if you're there as a man, you also fucking participate in the baby shower
stuff.
You
don't get to stay outside and barbecue.
You're not like, oh, the men stay outside and have a beer. The ladies can go in there and talk about diapers.
Yeah, this baby shower was written by Paula Cole in 2003. But,
Go have a beer. But
it doesn't make any sense.
But she in that scene, has a full-ass Pepsi can that she is just holding the whole scene to camera.
Yeah, and she never even opens it. It's held at an angle so that you can read it.
And when she gets to the baby shower later in the movie, they're immediately like, hey, here's a Pepsi. She's like, a Pepsi? You don't think I can have a beer holding this Pepsi can to camera?
I also just love the framing of that scene where every other woman in there, including Mary Parker, who's theoretically supposed to be like a super spy or something. There's a whole storyline behind her.
Oh, yeah. Richard and Mary are supposed to be spies. Yeah,
where every single person in this building is wearing like a pastel or white and summer yellow sundress.
Yeah.
Except for her. She's wearing like a dark orange blazer, like motorcycle jacket and black leathers otherwise.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, she's the one who sticks out. She shouldn't be here. Yeah, and she shouldn't have to be.
No.
This is weird gender shit for 2003.
It is. I mean, we are skipping past the point where she gets her powers, but
that's because I want to talk about what I want to talk about.
Oh, I know.
But I mean,
here's the thing.
Because they keep forcing her to participate in games, even though there's like 40 fucking people there and no one knows who the fuck she is.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, you are. Mary probably knows who you are.
Vaguely.
Ben talks about you.
Yeah.
So I know who you are. I'm glad you could come. You say, as a thing that you say that is nice to someone that shows up to your event and you hope brought you a present, she didn't.
Yeah, what you really want to say is, you can go back outside to the barbecue. You do not belong in here.
But it's also one of those things where one of the, like, games is, oh, you write down a memory of your mom on a slip of paper, and then Mary has to guess whose memory it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when she gets one that is blank, instead of going, oh, a blank one got in here, putting it to the side and drawing a new one.
Who
she's
put
like,
a blank one in here?
Who did this? And Dakota's like, oh, me, that's mine. It's fine. You can go on. She's like, well, surely you must have a memory that you like of your mother.
There's like a Greek chorus. There's like a jury of women in here who are like, no one doesn't have fond memories of mother.
Yeah. You're like, oh, dude, if someone was like, oh, that's blank and it's mine, the immediate thought I have is, oh, they have a bad relationship with their mom. Do not fucking talk about this.
Yeah.
And instead they're like, please share with us all of your details about your mother.
Also, I'm just going to put this out there. Why did she put a blank one in there? Why not just take the thing put it in your pocket and be done?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the game's going to go through every single piece. And even if it does, no one's going to notice they never drew you.
Exactly. And if they do, they get to the end, they're like, well, I've guessed everyone. Except for you, Cassandra Webb.
And then she just goes, yeah, mom issues. I don't know any of you well enough to get into it. And you're fine.
Everyone here is so awkward because they're just like, well, you have to have a memory of your mom that you like. And she's like, No, my mom died in childbirth. And instead of leaving it there, she then is like, oh, but, you know, you won't die in childbirth.
That's actually very rare.
And it's just she that my was mom, in the Amazon.
Yeah, she was her choice to be hundreds of miles from a hospital.
She was studying spiders in the Amazon where spiders are with the Amazon.
Where the Los Arañas are, the spider people.
You see, she was trying to find spiders for peptides. And speaking of peptides, the Pepsi here is amazing, turn to camera.
The Pepsi tide is sweeping the nation.
Also, throughout this entire scene for this, there is a Pepsi turned to camera sitting on the table mid-placement of the shot.
The other fun thing for just this, our showing of this movie, was that the captions were turned on for some reason in the theater.
We went to see a closed captioned version of this.
Yes. And they include a lot of lines during this whole scene of Ben, who was outside barbecuing, which are supposed to just be minor noises happening to let you know that there is still a party going on outside that is not like this ruined party. But the captions treat them with the exact same importance. Huh. So halfway through, she'll be like, no, my mother died in childbirth. And then Ben Parker will have a line that says, like, you're squeezing all the juice out of that hamburger. No, do the thing where you flip it. And he's just like... The gravitas is being ruined by this.
So before that happened, though.
Yes, let's go back.
She gets called in to, there was a big accident on some bridge, and she has to go into a car to save someone's life, and gets him unbuckled in the car. The car is flipped upside down and sort of doing that movie teetering on the edge thing.
Uh-huh.
So he gets out. Ben pulls him out after she cuts
the seatbelt.
Seatbelt off.
Yeah.
And then the car goes over the edge with her in it.
Yeah.
We get some real dollar store Doctor Strange CGI.
Yeah. We got to do some, like, you live in a big web thing. Bottom text.
Yeah. And then she gets a bunch of, you know, visions and auditory hallucinations of things that will happen later in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then she is brought back to life by Ben Parker doing CPR.
Yeah, and modern CPR, where he isn't giving her the breaths, which were a common thing in 2003 to do two breaths and then 15 compressions.
Yeah.
Now, he's just doing modern CPR where you don't bother with breaths at all.
No, we don't know. We only see when she wakes up. He might have been doing breaths.
We do know that later when she teaches CPR to the other girls, which is a huge scene that takes forever, she doesn't teach them about rescue breaths, which, were a major part of CPR standard in 2003.
But I think you probably can't get away with that. Like, oh, we're going to have an entire scene where we teach CPR wrong to people.
You're going to teach them modern CPR. It's true. I mean, you absolutely can, given the provenance of CPR movies just being wailing away on someone with one hand while yelling, live, damn it, at them.
Oh, I mean, given that all movies that are like, oh, and of course a defibrillator will just cure someone of anything.
It'll do things CPR won't. Given speaking as a person who has performed CPR until the person was taken or handed over to a paramedic who pronounced them dead, I I know what CPR can do, and it can accomplish miracles sometimes, but not every single time.
So she wakes up. And now she's got superpower. She can see into the future, but she can't control it. And it mostly just plays out as the standard, like, we'll do the scene, and then a loud noise will be what triggers the start of the scene, and then we'll play that loud noise again to show, oh, we're going back from that point.
Yes.
So it happens at the shower with a balloon popping.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on it'll be like, oh, a train goes by, and so there's a loud noise, and we know that's the point where we're going from.
Yeah.
It happens that way a lot.
You're gonna get used to a lot of seeing scenes in this movie twice. Because, you know, you gotta have some way to portray that this person has limited future sight.
Yeah.
It's much better once she gets her powers all under control and everything, and then she's just like an indestructible person who knows where every single attack is coming from. It takes all the tension out of the movie, but you don't have to watch it over and over again.
Oh, yeah. I don't need to watch, like, Dakota Johnson look confusedly at
what?
A person.
We just did this.
Why? Is this real?
Yeah.
I ask very just placidly to someone on a train,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, dude, it's New York. Don't talk to me.
Yeah. she gets her powers, but at the moment she just thinks she has weird deja vu issues. Her commanding officer, who's also the guy whose house they're holding the baby shower at, I think.
Yep, Mike Epps.
He Shows up at a big rescue event, which is really important to establish that the movie is going to have a climactic scene that takes place in an abandoned fireworks factory.
Yeah, you know, the abandoned Pepsi-Cola fireworks factory.
Yeah, because they have a giant Pepsi sign on the roof. Like, yeah. It's one of those, like, Batman Gotham City signs where it's all physical, you know?
Yeah.
And not just, like, a billboard, but, like, you know, physical giant neon
tube. The old-style 1920s in the same, like, font of Pepsi-Cola.
Yeah.
Big sign.
Big sign. But it's a fireworks factory, so it must be Pepsi brand fireworks.
Yeah.
But he's like, this place is a horrible death trap, not like a modern Pepsi fireworks factory where all the workers are paid at least minimum wage in accordance with U.S. laws.
If this factory was still holding Pepsi and not fireworks, it would instead be a fun time vill for good people and delicious drinks.
It's the choice of a new generation of Spider-Men. But he gets in his truck to drive away, and she's had a vision of him dying by doing that. So she's like, hey, can I come with you? Can I drive? Let me drive. I need to drive. And he's like, what's wrong with you? You died the other day and came back to life. You've had some traumas. Quit asking me if you can drive and just leave me alone.
Just you need to be here because we need you on like the trauma center. Cause there's a big fire, like some explosion happened. There's a bunch of injured people. I need you here and I'm going to go drive off. It's fine. Don't worry about me. And of course, he immediately gets hit by a car like the vision, and she's like, oh my goodness, my visions are actually real, except no, she will spend another, like, 20 minutes of this movie going, well, there's something else, there's gotta be something else.
Something weird is happening.
I'm gonna talk to my ophthalmologist about it.
That's great when she gets, because we have to establish that she decides to actually go to the hospital now, after rejecting it earlier in the movie when she gets rescued from the water. So she's at the last leg of her getting checked out tour, which is an eye doctor. So she's in an ophthalmologist's office, and they're like, I've looked it over all your charts, from your MRI scan results to your CT scan results, and as far as I can tell, you're doing perfectly fine. It must just be some deep-seated personal trauma you're suffering from. Have you considered that? And I'm like, you are an eye doctor.
No, it's one of those movie doctors that is all doctors.
All doctors. All doctors at once.
I'm the doctor who gave you your CAT scan and also the one who does your eye exam.
Uh-huh.
This is a hospital with one doctor in it.
Yes, and we have infinite time for you. But she's just like, wait, well, I'm having a lot of visions. Are there any medical excuses for that? She's like, well, I guess you could be nuts.
You should probably talk to someone about that. Maybe, you know, when you died, you're having some guilt issues, and then
yeah, it's probably got something to do with your mom dying in the Amazon during when she was studying
spiders.
You
probably go look in your box of spider stuff.
Yeah, go check that out, because that'll probably help you learn something, or at least you'll probably find like a bunch of notes about peptides.
You get to sit there and be like, mom, I hope the spiders were worth it. Like, dude, what the fuck? Also, I just have the question of, how did you end up in Queens when you were like abandoned in Peru? Like, what was the chain that got you into foster care in America?
It's an interesting question, because somehow she managed to make it to foster care in America and did not instead end up with her father or any extended family of her mother.
Yep.
We don't establish any. I guess all of them were just like, no.
And who flew the baby back to America?
I have to assume that it was like, maybe she was flown back because they knew that the mom had like extended family, and then they were just like, I don't have time for this. I'm going to drop her off at a fire station and we're done.
The
story, whatever it is, seems like it would be some interesting drama to go through, and we just don't want to.
Oh, no. The movie is basically just like, oh, we want the whole concept to be like, ooh, Cassandra has problems with motherhood and children, so that by the end of it, she can be a mother figure to these children. Character growth.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it. You establish that she hates moms and kids, and then she becomes a mom with kids.
Yep. Meanwhile, we start getting our first views of modern-day Ezekiel Sims. He's become a rich multimillionaire with a super cool apartment who is walking into the middle of an opera so he can hit on a lady who works for the NSA and steal her passwords so he can hack into her system or something.
Yeah, we have a whole thing where he apparently has a vision of the costumed, slightly more grown-up-ish versions of Anya Corazon, Julia Cornwall, and Maddie Franklin in their, like, actual Spider-Woman outfits.
Yes.
Killing him.
Yes.
And so he's, like, talking to this random person that he picked up at the opera who was staying over at his apartment because they had, you know, fun times.
They had some good times. They played a several interesting games of Rummy Cub.
They definitely played Mario Kart and then bounced on a trampoline.
Yes.
And he's just like, I have the same vision every night. These women are going to kill me at some point. and I don't know who they are, and of course I've been having these visions since the 70s, so technology doesn't really exist that shows, you know, anything. Although, in the vision, I'm, like, way older than I am right now, but when we see them, they're, like, the same age that they are right now. It's a weird thing in the vision.
That's the thing I like about visions, man.
I get older, and they stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
Uh-huh. All right. All right. All right.
So, yeah, he's got, like, really, like, long white gray hair in the vision. It's weird, because he... I mean, the vision's just dead wrong. His vision is just incorrect.
Yeah, it's, oh, I'm going to get killed by these three spider women. No, you're not. Not even close.
You're going to die before they ever get spider powers or have their outfits or anything, but you're going to have visions of what those will look like.
Yeah, it is a weird thing that in this movie, like, visions of the future is part of spider powers because they're like, oh, spider sense is basically, you know, clairvoyance. It's just Dakota Johnson got none of the physical stuff and all of the mental stuff, so she has super
the most spider sense. Yeah, she's spider sense taken to its logical extreme.
But the fact that he's like, oh, I have all of the physical stuff, and I just have, instead of even spider sense, I just have one vision of the future that is wrong.
It's called out in the movie specifically as a curse he is suffering from because he stole that spider from Las Arañas.
But anyway, he kills the NSA lady in addition to having standard Spider-Man powers,
all
has
the one,
poison
yeah,
touch.
He doesn't have webs.
Well, that's not a Spider-Man power. That would be a web shooter, unless you're going off of the shitty, like, oh, I have
it's
organic webs.
It's Spider-Verse. Some of them have organic webs.
Bleh, sucks. Sucks shit. Not baseline Spider-Man. Not my Spider-Man.
I mean, Miles has it. He's part of the Spider-Verse.
Miles.
No, wait, does he? Does he
no.
have, he doesn't have organic web? He has, oh yeah, you're right. He has to have web shooters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's a web shooter kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just Tobey Maguire.
It's just Tobey Maguire and probably some other, I'm pretty sure there are other Spider-Men who just have the web shooties.
Oh yeah. I'm sure somewhere out there is one.
Yeah.
But he does not have that. He just has the standard, like, spider powers and then also poison touch.
Yeah, he has a poison touch. But no web stuff, which means he has to run around on the sides of walls and stuff.
Yeah. So he poison touches this NSA woman to death while getting her password from her.
And then he gives it to Zosia Mamet, who's in this movie as his dude in chair.
And she has nothing that we know. She's like, oh, I guess you're an employee / hostage?
Yeah, she's the employee who lives in his apartment and uses his giant wall of computers and never leaves.
Yeah.
Or sleeps
and is
or
constantly threatened with death by,
yeah,
you know, evil Spider-Man.
I pay you a fortune. And she's like, I have not left I will never leave this chair, as far as I'm aware. I'm not sure what the money's for.
I don't
for.
Know what she did before that, because she wasn't in the apartment before. She's like, oh, I've just been on ice until you need someone to hack things.
Yeah, she is such a non-entity. They should have just replaced her with an AI. He's just been like, also,
no, it's 2003. I can't have AI
It's
yet.
Fine. He could have been like, it's 2003, which means every Disney Channel original movie was about how someone built a smart house or something. Ah. So he could have easily been like, yes, of course. And one of my other spider powers was to build a cool house that's super smart and can track children.
Anyway, he uses NSA nonsense to, you know, do super techno powers of, well, I described what they looked like in my vision, so we will have actual picture-perfect versions of them.
Yeah,
that
it's just headshots of the three actors. They didn't even try.
And then we'll also then de-age those images, and then we'll run it through every camera that exists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We immediately found them.
There they are. They're all at Grand Central Station or whatever right now.
Great.
And that's because we're about to do another one of those Fates Cross sequences as all three of the girls descend on the station to get on the same train that Cassandra is going to get on because she's going to Poughkeepsie for some reason.
To the funeral for O'Neill, the guy who died in the crash.
That's correct, yes. So,
which she never goes to.
Nope, she doesn't, because she starts having horrible visions of evil Spider-Man walking.
Mostly she just has a vision of some dude in a jacket, like, you know, killing little girls.
Well, I think it's amusing. We mentioned this to each other because we could talk freely during this movie, being the only people in the theater, that they initially set up Ezekiel Sims the way he actually looks if you, like, Google him.
Oh, yeah. Sims' normal outfit of just, I'm wearing a, like, suit jacket and pants and no shirt or shoes.
I don't care for shoes.
But he's just like, oh yeah, because, you know, you normally have to be like, I need to stick to things with my hands and feet, and I don't have super advanced, you know, spider costumes. So
yeah, they never...
instead, I just run around in pants and no shoes.
The whole Spider-Man thing has never, or being able to run, especially now you have Miles and his shoe game is always a big part of his character arc, and you're like, I see that dude standing on ceilings all the fucking time. How is it? How long are the little claws sticking out of his feet that they're going through his Air Jordans?
No, now it's just, I don't know. I've
super
got,
tech. It's
I've
fine.
Got sticky aura.
Yeah.
I've got tactile telekinesis. It's I'm Superboy.
It's just one of those things they never bother explaining because it would make the whole story worse if everyone had to be barefoot, which makes it really weird that when you introduce a barefoot Spider-Man who's like, yeah, I have to be barefoot. How else do I walk on ceilings and walls?
I have to connect to it in order to, you know, stick to it. Because the only other way would be to have, like, a very thin, almost like spandex thing, and that would look stupid because I'm an old man, so instead I just walk around barefoot.
So anyway, here I go to change into a spandex thing.
Yeah. They're like, oh, here's Ezekiel Sims the way he should look, and now here's him as evil Spider-Man.
Yes.
All right. Okay, sure. And I thought for sure that they were doing some weird thing where he also could, like, cloud the minds of anyone who wasn't, like,
oh,
a
right,
victim.
Because no one else sees him in the initial scene.
He is crawling on the ceiling of the subway, and the three girls and Cassandra are like, holy shit, what the fuck is that? And pointing at a dude crawling on the ceiling, and everyone else is like, doot doot doo, I'm very calm. And they're like, does no one else see that?
Yeah.
No one reacts. Evil Spider-Man then murders a bunch of cops.
He has the MO. This is his standard operating procedure. Is he'll walk
I need to kill these three people because they will in the future kill me.
And they're the only thing I care about, to the point where there's a part where he has a chance to learn about who Cassandra Webb is so he can maybe shut her down. And he just goes, I don't care about her. I only care about killing the three girls.
Yeah, that's the only thing that matters to me, is stopping this future from happening.
It's like, well, she's clearly helping them. Maybe you should add her to the pile.
But instead, his MO, anytime he shows up anywhere where these girls are, that is the only thing he cares about. He's like, okay, well, first I've got to just kill everyone else in the room, and then I will attack you.
Uh-huh.
Which is weird, but even then, when they manage to get out, and Cassie's got the three of them in a cab she steals,
mm-hmm.
and she hears on the radio that, you know, a lady has kidnapped three teenage girls, she's like, what, did no one see the fucking spider guy? And so the fact that they hammered home consistently in that scene that no one else could see him, I was like, oh, he's got some weird, like, yeah, blending powers or something.
Something. He's got that Miles Morales invisibility. So he's got something going on.
He has the shadow powers where he clouds men's minds. He's got something where people weren't noticing him except for them.
He does not.
He doesn't. Because then later in the film, he just shows up at, like, a diner, and everyone's like, oh shit, a Spider-Man.
God, can we talk about for just a second how this movie introduces the concept that there are going to be three spider women running around in Spider-Man themed costumes, as well as an evil Spider-Man running around, all like 15 years before Spider-Man makes his costume?
Yeah.
Like, there's no originality to him anymore. Like, by definition, by the time he comes up age to become a Spider-Man, he'll be like, well, I'll just base my costume on all those famous spider people that were running around in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Like you had mentioned when we were watching the movie, it is a big Gotham TV show problem where you're like, why is every villain like 30 years older than Batman now?
Yes. Or at least this one. He's not even a villain. Like, you could even potentially salvage him, but it means he'll be like way older than Anya Corazon and Maddie, or way younger than, it'll be 30 years younger than like Maddie Franklin.
Yeah.
Or I guess like 16 or 17.
Yeah, 16 years younger, but they'll be in their 30s and he'll be like, hi, I'm 18.
Yeah.
Shit.
I mean, at least it works for Maddie, because I think she's a short-term Spider-Woman. She dies pretty quick.
Well, I mean, this movie very much wants to set up that these are like, ooh, we're going to do a franchise with these Spider-Women.
Yes, it does.
Especially given that the last shot of this feels like the last shot you would have at the pilot of a CW show about Spider-Man. Where you're like, ah, and now all of us stand in our costumes with, like, arms folded, staring at camera, and we're all like, slightly turning our backs to each other and looking out, and
like,
Pepsi can.
I just want to say this. If you're a filmmaker, yeah, I'm sure all filmmakers and hopeful filmmakers listen to this show. Why would they listen to anything else? If you're a hopeful filmmaker, and you're making a movie for either Sony, or for that matter, HBO or Warner Brothers, don't plan for sequels. Just don't build your movie to end on a cliffhanger.
Oh, the thing is, you know that wasn't a director choice. Sony was like,
oh, yeah,
we're making a million of these movies. Yeah. We have three planned for this year.
Just tell them no. You're like, this movie will tank and it won't make $1 billion and so you'll cancel it. I guarantee you there will be no sequel.
But they can't because Sony specifically was like, we are looking for someone to write the Madam Web movie.
Mm-hmm.
They hired someone to do it. It wasn't like, oh, someone came to us with a spec
That's
script
true.
For Madam Web and we went, you know what? That's just crazy enough to work. They were like, we have decided right now to put our eggs in the Madam Web basket, and we are going to go all in on it going forward.
I wish that I could be a ghost just so I could hang around the Sony writing rooms and say, like, the place where they make these decisions, so I could see what the fuck is going on in there. I am so curious. Like, what happened
it's
in
the
were,
movie.
What happened where they were like, maybe we shouldn't move forward on the whole Black Cat / Silver Sable movie because we just aren't happy with where we're going. This Madam Web movie, though.
That's the money.
Gold, baby.
That's the reason we're not going to do Black Cat and Silver Sable is because those aren't spider people. We need spider people.
Yeah.
We need movies about Spider-Mans.
I think at one point Maddie Franklin mentions her Uncle Jonah, and I was like, oh my God, is she Jonah, J. Jonah Jameson's niece?
Anyway, so we get the group of them, the three girls and Cassie, are essentially just running around trying to get away from Ezekiel.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel...
She is. Oh, okay.
Is, I just... He has his... Amaria is his person in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
Who's just like, well... I've looked through every camera that exists, and they're gone. They're ghosts. We can't find them. And
he's like, don't forget, I will kill you if you do not find them. Although he won't. She just is a loose end in this movie.
Oh, yeah. She just, by the end of this movie, is like, I just want it to cut back. There's no end credit scene, but I wanted the end credit to just cut back to her and go, hello?
Huh?
Just in an empty apartment? Can I go?
I'm going to take a Diet Coke from the fridge.
Wait, I mean Diet Pepsi. Shit!
Ah, shoot! Oh, shoot!
And then you just hear a gunshot, and it ends.
Guns to credits.
So, Cassie's main power in this, outside of psychic visions,
mm-hmm.
is her ability to hit Ezekiel Sims with a car.
Yes.
As she will do this, what, twice?
I mean, she keeps having visions where she tries to fight him in any way and he just Spider-Mans her, you know, she like swings a steak knife at him and she just catches it and takes it away and stabs her with it. So she's like, I know I cannot actually fight this guy.
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of superpowers. So she just keeps hitting him with cars.
Now, the first one, we've been talking for a while and I don't give a shit. This will go for longer than the movie is. I don't care.
Uh-huh.
So the diner scene. She leaves the kids in the woods. Does Cassie to go back to her house to look into the like her
suitcase
mom's
of mom
shit.
Mysteries? Yes.
The three kids decide we saw a diner about a half a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna go there and get food.
And then once we get there, we're gonna see boys, and we're gonna be like boys.
Now,
which is really weird.
Cassie gets back, and it is at night, but they've apparently been at this diner for just hours, I guess. But when she gets there, she has a vision of her, like, we don't know it's a vision yet, but she walks a half mile to a diner, sees them dancing on a table to Britney Spears' Toxic.
Surrounded by football player boys from some local town.
She gets into there and is like, get down, we're leaving. And as she is chastising them, Sims comes in and murders all of them, and then it snaps her back to her still being in the woods.
Yeah.
However... when it does that, Britney Spears' Toxic begins playing, whereas it didn't start playing until she had already walked half a mile in her vision
mm-hmm.
and gotten to this restaurant. And I was just like, you fucked the timing up. Your vision doesn't work that way. You've already established how your visions work.
It's established.
You fucker.
I mean, it's already been established based on what happens to Sims at the end of this movie that the visions are not direct or especially distinct.
No, just the whole point, all of her visions are a sound cue, and then we reset time to the sound cue.
Yeah.
Except this time she resets time 2 minutes ahead of where she was.
Yeah, except that Sims has the vision all the way through the movie of him getting kicked out of a window by the three mean spider women, and instead he gets kicked off of an exploding fireworks factory and a big S falls on him.
Yeah, but that's because the future changed.
Ah, yeah, well that's what happened here too.
Yeah, the future changed. In the time that, in the zero amount of time that her vision happened, time changed. The functionality of time moved forward.
How much time does it take for the future to change?
What the fuck? The future changed because someone made something happen. She didn't, like, call in and go, hey, instead of playing Britney Spears as your next song, play it right now.
I know. Okay. But
I'm saying the movie fucked up.
I'm saying that the movie did not fuck up, that it's just that Britney Spears' Toxic was a super hit song right at that time, so they were playing it on... It was just two different...
on her radio and a different radio in the diner.
Exactly. That's exactly... Because it's a jukebox in the diner, and it's a radio in her car.
And then also, she gets into the cab, so instead of walking half a mile to this diner, she drives there. However, she will arrive later to this diner than she would have had she walked half a mile.
Yes.
Which, again, what the fuck are you talking about,
movie? You don't see it, but she stops for donuts.
Yes.
I'm on this movie side now.
That scene made me so angry. I was like, you've established how your visions work. And it made me happy the same way every time and not now.
It just made me happy because I predicted she was going to hit him with a car. And every time I was just like, she's going to hit him with that fucking car, isn't she? And then she does over and over again.
The worst part is when she's like, I'm going to hit that guy with a car, and drives through a billboard from a building. And I'm like, how did you get a car up there?
Spider powers. Don't worry about it.
I saw in the future. In the future, I could drive a car up a building. I very briefly went into the Fast and Furious franchise.
I just wanted the movie to briefly address when all the girls decide that, oh, boys, and they decide to go talk to and then dance for the boys.
They are dancing on the table of a diner, which if you've ever been in a diner, you know that some 70-year-old waitress would immediately come over and go, get the fuck off that table. What the hell are you doing?
Also, if you're Sydney Sweeney and you're wearing an 8-inch long at most miniskirt, you're like, I'm not getting on that fucking table. Fuck you. They're surrounded by guys.
Yeah. Oh.
And anyway. Instead, none of them are like, oh, wow, look, you can totally see up her skirt. And so they're just like, yay, they're dancing.
Yay. There's no reaction from us. We're basically blurry in the background, even though we are right next to you.
Yeah.
She saves them. They leave.
Uh-huh.
We then find out everyone's tragic backstory, where Anya's dad got deported. So she's been living alone in an apartment for months.
And trying to hide out from the landlord.
Julia was only in Grand Central because she was running away from her family. Because she's like, oh, my stepfamily doesn't give a fuck about me. And I thought, if I ran away, maybe they would.
I mean, they genuinely don't. Because at the beginning of this movie, she's there at the hospital with her dad to visit her mom, who just had some sort of cardiac incident. And her dad says, you're not really part of the family. Stay here in the hallway.
Yeah, she probably doesn't want to see you. You should stay out here.
Yeah.
You're not actually her child. And then just fucks off with the other kid.
Yeah.
Maddie has super rich parents, and they're not around. They're off in China.
I always find it funny when you have to do three kids who have parent issues, and one of them is that my parents are super wealthy and they're not around very often, and it's presented with equal...
My dad got deported. My family hates me. My parents are too rich.
Yeah.
You know, one of these things is not like the others.
So when you go home, there'll be like a housekeeper and a staff waiting for you, and if you want to like hire security, you just can.
You're just fully... capable of feeding yourself, and you have full security for the rest of your life, and you can go to whatever college and get whatever job you want.
And she's like, yeah, but I'm mad at them. And
yeah, but they don't, I don't know, talk to me a lot. And I'm like, dude, you're a teenager. You don't talk to your parents anyway.
Yeah. And your mom's in a psych ward because she's kind of gone crazy, and your stepfather wants nothing to do with you, so you're trapped here. But I'm too rich, guys.
But I have parents that are very wealthy, and that's sad for me.
It's sad, and I actually am J. Jonah Jameis's niece. I looked it up.
I looked it up in the universe where I exist.
Yeah. So it's fucked. And at this point, they're all like starting to bond because she just saved them. So now they don't think she's like abducting them and crazy. They think she has superpowers and she's trying to save them from an evil super spider, which is perfect because this is the point where she finally lays it on the line what her powers are and how they kind of work. And she's like, but they're not good enough. And one of them goes, so you need to go to Peru and learn more. And she's like, yes.
Yes. And drops off these three kids with Ben Parker and is like, hey, you can watch these three kids for me. And he's like, yeah, I'll do it. That's okay. Fine. I'm a good person and I want to help out.
No questions asked. It sure seems like you got yourself into a real sticky situation there.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that we don't get a scene of her explaining what is going on. Ben just sort of, we smash cut to Ben going, well, you got to do what you got to do, and I'll take care of them. Don't you worry about a thing. I am fully accommodating. I will not immediately call the police and have this sorted out.
Yeah.
And he takes them while she gets an immediate flight to Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And
walks into the exact same spot in the jungle because, you know, the Peruvian Amazon is very small.
Oh, yeah. She manages to find literally the exact spot that her mom was standing.
Yeah. And she can tell because she holds up an old photo of it against a tree, and the tiny branches on the tree are the same 30 years later.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's how that works.
That's how time works.
And, you know, she wasn't deep in the jungle or anything. She was like on a bus route.
Yeah. She was off the bus route.
Yeah.
I took the stop to Spiders.
The Spider Town, and has 1 second of going,
the
ah,
next
yes.
stop, Spider Town.
Ah, Las Arañas.
Menswear and spider people.
Mm-hmm. She has like 1 second to go like, yes, this is the same tree my mom looked at one time many years ago. When a guy comes around from behind her and is like, ah, you came back for answers. I am the spider person.
I'm the spider person that saved your mom. Come with me. I have empty platitudes.
Now, no one else from the Las Arañas are around, and I'm not wearing that ridiculous getup. I'm wearing a nice outfit now.
Yeah, I'm not in the like full red body paint with vines all over me. Instead, I'm just some guy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to tell you that the mysteries of the world are the world's mysteries for a reason.
He basically just does tautologies.
When you see into the future also sees into you. God damn it.
Yeah. You will learn to control your ability to see the future, and the thing you will see is your control. Okay.
Also, when you accept responsibility, then will come great power. Womp, 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 womp. It's the saying, but backwards. Ah. We did the thing.
It's just going to be a lot of this, he says, apologetically.
Now, please, get into my weird milky cum pool.
Wow, there's a surprising amount of cum in this pool.
And so many trill.
Las Arañas do put all of our cums directly into that pool.
Look, there's a lot of white strands floating in this pool that she gets into, and I'm like, this is gross.
It's web water. That's what it is. Don't worry about it.
It's webs. Spider water.
It's spider water.
It's filled with spider.
It's how you get your powers. It's how come that kid from Saltburn got powers.
So.
Gross.
We then get some more dollar store Doctor Strange as the Los Arañas guy just pushes her spirit out of her body in a full Doctor Strange ripoff, and her spirit falls into the cum pool, and she sees the future.
She sees a montage. Well, she sees the past. She sees a montage of mom stuff, where she sees her mom dying and then goes even further back.
My mom problems were actually not problems. She didn't hate me. She loved me.
It's just that I had some sort of ridiculous genetic disease that only a certain type of spider peptide could cure, so she was trying to find one in time.
Yeah.
And then her mom becomes aware of her ghost presence in the past and hugs her.
Yeah, ghost mom hugs her and then disappears, and she's like, wow, that was amazing. How did you do that? You did that. And anyway, in time, you'll, I don't know, have cool powers, but you gotta get back on a plane, because I don't know how long you've been here. You probably had to stay in the airport for like a full day to actually get onto a plane flight to Peru. It took you a while to get here. You then had to, you know, charter a bus to get out to here. I don't know how long it took you to hike to where we are.
It's not a short flight.
You're gonna have to get back. You also got to have a return trip. You didn't know when you were coming back, so you're also last minute doing that. It's a good thing you're obviously very wealthy.
Yeah, you're
as someone that lives
wealthy.
In New York in the early 2000s and works for the paramedics, getting paid, I assume, minimum wage.
I'm pretty sure paramedics make more than minimum because of how hard it is to get into it, but not enough.
Not much.
Not that much more so. Yeah, it's, and plus she is actually a city paramedic. She's not working for one of those like private paramedic companies.
Yeah, probably, one of the ones that is just a bus.
Yeah, so she's probably doing okay. But yeah, definitely not like I can buy flights to and from Peru on a whim.
Yeah. Anyway,
she steals another vehicle after.
When she is coming back, we cut to the kids at Ben and Mary's, because Ben is taking care of Mary Parker, who is pregnant with Peter, although we will never say the name Peter. Mm-hmm. And we will never say, even though Ben is like, I found someone. Oh, what's her name? I can't say May.
I can't say May or Peter, but we're allowed to say Ben, and we're allowed to say Richard and Mary Parker.
Yeah. So Richard is off somewhere, so he's basically looking after Mary because she's pregnant, and the teenagers are there hanging out, and then Mary's water breaks.
Yes, and so they all pile into a car, even though they already know that they can't go anywhere where cameras are.
Well,
they just
like,
temporarily forget.
Ezekiel is trying to hunt us down and murder us. But we'll all get into a car together and drive off to the hospital. That sounds like a good plan.
None of us
just hiding here.
None of us want to go. We all keep saying that this lady whose water broke is gross, but we'll go. You know,
we'll all get in the car and go for funsies.
Uh huh.
I mean, nothing's better for you when you're, you know, going into labor than to be squeezed into the back seat between two teenagers,
who do not want to be there and think you're gross.
How did they not give her the fucking front seat? Like, did Maddie go, "I called shotgun. Fuck you." Being pregnant doesn't change the rules of shotgun.
Now, Mary, I do advise, as Ben Parker, I advise you to respect the rules of shotgun calling, because that's a responsibility.
With great power comes great shotgun responsibility. They drive off. Immediately, Maddie is seen in the window by a camera, and so now Ezekiel knows where they are.
So he goes hunting after them. Meanwhile, right as that happens, Cassie shows up at the house, sees the water, the broken water on the floor of the kitchen, and has another vision of what's going on, steals an ambulance.
Yeah, because the ambulance that was going to show up to take Mary to the hospital finally arrives, because they left while they were waiting for it, and she just steals it.
Yeah.
Which is great. Love that. Love that she's just a full car thief
in this
movie. I
love
this
movie has so little time, because it's introducing so many fucking characters that... Setting up that Anya Corazon is a math whiz means that she just has to wear a shirt that says she's a math whiz on it.
I eat Matthew for breakfast.
It says I eat math for breakfast, but she's always wearing a jacket, so it looks like it says I eat Matthew for breakfast because of the kerning.
Yeah.
And we're just like, who's Matthew? That's exciting for him. But also, at this point, she establishes her bona fides of being good at math by calculating how the percentage at which the speed of Mary Parker's contractions are increasing is.
Yep.
But then they get attacked by an evil Spider-Man just in time. He shows up and he has a grenade in one hand. And he's like watching them dramatically. And then an ambulance comes sailing through a billboard and smacks into him again. He just keeps getting hit with cars.
It's so funny because I was joking when I said, oh, she's going to hit him with the car again.
It's going to fly through a billboard.
I was like, oh, it's going to come right through that Calvin Klein billboard behind him. That's hilarious. I'm making a joke because that would be fucking stupid. And then it happened.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, the building behind him is like an office building that has a billboard there. How did you drive an ambulance up like three stories and out? And if you drove it into the wall, how did you maintain enough momentum to get through it and hit him and then land the car and get out and be like, and I'm fine.
I'm fine. Everybody piloted
that
ambulance.
I have no spider powers, but I'm fine now.
Yeah, she has one spider power.
Well, eh.
So she takes all the girls and gives Ben the blessing to leave the movie, although
yep.
He doesn't. He has one more scene where baby Peter is born but doesn't have a name yet.
Yeah.
And just so he can be like, wow, he's perfect. He certainly will be marketable someday.
Ah. And at this point, all of the girls are in street clothes outfits that are the same color combinations as what their superhero outfits would be.
That is correct,
so,
yeah.
That's all we're going to get from that.
Uh-huh.
But then also, now Cassie has unlocked basically her true potential, and now she just has the ability to see the future, and it's always good for her.
Yes, she can
it's
always...
never, I need to change things. It's just, oh, I saw into the future. In the future, Spider-Man gets fucked up.
I mean, basically, she can see where things go wrong, but how to avoid it all the time. And also, she now has that generic future power where she just knows where everything is coming from. So she'll just walk along with the kids and be like, you, duck, you take three steps to the left. Boom, bang. Okay, great. Let's keep moving.
I mean, it's a great setup as far as, oh, I'm going to go into a fireworks factory and light a bunch of flares to set off a ton of fireworks. Because if I have the ability to predict and know when a firework might shoot at us,
mm-hmm.
then we can avoid it. And I assume Sims does not.
Yeah. Now, technically, he should also have some spider sense, but probably not enough.
I mean, that's... he got all the physical powers, and she got all the mental powers.
Oh, they're
you see,
a dark mirror.
They're a dark mirror.
Ooh. Love those. Those are so hot right now.
And this is also the only scene in the movie where they do the... what if Spider-Man was like a horror movie thing? Because it's just a dark, like dim warehouse, and you can just see this figure like leaping and crouching and crawling around. And you're like, yeah, it would be very fucking scary to have a Spider-Man after you.
Yeah.
Especially because he doesn't have webs or anything. So he just has to physically beat the shit out of you.
I've heard that's the only good part of the new of that new Justice League or Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League game.
Uh-huh.
Is there's one scene where you're fighting Batman, and because it is technically a sequel to the Arkham games, he Arkhams you. He's like coming down from the rooftop and pulling and grabbing you up from like floor grates and pulling you into them and so on. And you can survive for a while, but eventually he does get you. Because he's just fucking, it's Batman Arkhaming you, and there's nothing you can fucking do about it.
Yeah. Anyway, the big conclusion to this is a bunch of fireworks go off, and Cassie continually sees into the future where it's like, oh, and then a firework is going to hit Spider-Man, and it does.
Yeah, and then one's going to almost hit me, but I'll hold up this piece of sheet metal and I'll be fine.
Yep. All right, great. I've got plot power now where I just know everything that's going
to
happen.
Yeah. So eventually they end up on the roof. She's already in advance called for a helicopter to come rescue everybody. The helicopter comes way too close to that sign.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just like, go to the south side and we'll pick you up. And as that happens, the ceiling blows up. Bad Spider-Man's there. He manages to knock everybody around. So all the girls are hanging in fear for their lives. And he immediately takes his mask off, just like instantly.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're at the point now where... instead of it being creepy, we have to have, you know, the actual actor talk to you.
Yes. And so he just pulls it. You know, he just goes, yeah, here, fuck this thing. And he's like, you can't save all three of them. And
yeah,
she goes,
all three of them are dangling precariously. So it's that whole like, oh, you can only save one and all three are in danger.
And you don't even, I'm sure for him, he's like, I wouldn't even care if you saved one. The Vision is all three of them killing me. So if even one of them is dead, I'm probably fine.
And it's funny because he's like, you can't save all three. And I should probably be trying to actively kill one of them, but instead I'm just going to, I don't know, stand here and look at you?
Menace you, I guess? But she's like, you don't know what I can and can't do. And that's when she gets her new power, which is to create ghosts of herself that are connected to her via spirit webs that fly out and rescue everybody.
Yeah, she just has astral projections of herself go save all three of them. And while that happens, Sim just stands there and watches it. He's like, huh,
yeah.
What the fuck do you know?
Until the last second when he like kicks at her and she goes flying backwards, which still has the ghost strings that are connected to the ghost versions of Cassie Webb are like elastically connected to her so that when she gets kicked backwards, all the girls go flying up towards her anyway.
Well,
it's strange.
He only hits her after the ghost versions of her save all three of them.
Yeah.
And then the three versions of her then go like elasticing back into
her. Yeah, they're sproing into her. And then he's mad at her, tells her she's just like her mom because he's figured out who she is. And she predicts.
She's like, yes, I am like my mom.
And also, I've already seen that you get killed by this Pepsi sign that we're fighting next to. So I just need to stand here until you die.
I just need to move and move. And okay, now you die.
Uh huh.
And an explosion happens and she falls into the water. And the CPR that she taught the three girls earlier saves her life as they commit to keeping her alive with modern CPR.
Well, now let's not forget what the movie apparently forgot until the last 30 seconds, which is that, you know, Madam Web's supposed to be blinded in a wheelchair, so we got to get that done.
Yep, so that's what the explosion was for.
So real quick, while she's in the water, a firework falls through the water and explodes right next to her eyes so that she goes blind.
Yep.
And it's like such an afterthought.
So she wakes up after having CPR done, and oh, she's got the like milked over eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's in the hospital and she's like, ah, yes, wonderful, everything's great now. And
then
one of the best things that ever happens is the three of them are sitting there around her bed, and a nurse walks in and is like, direct family only, are these your family? And she's like, yes, they are,
they're mine.
And then without a word, the nurse just goes and then closes the door and leaves. Like, why did you come in here?
I didn't need to be in here anyway. I was just checking around for secret, not family people.
I just hate it when someone's visiting against the rules. I'm a real piece of shit about that.
But also, Julia or Sydney Sweeney is just like, hey, I just talked to Ben because the baby's been born. He says he's having a great time being an uncle because he gets all of the fun and none of the responsibility.
Oh, that's what he thinks.
I'm like, how many times do you need to fit the responsibility line into this movie? Is there nothing else about Ben Parker? I know there pretty much isn't, but still, no. Like once would have been fine.
It's fine. You can't make a Spider-Man movie without some responsibility shit.
Yeah.
And then we get the end of the movie where Cassandra is now in the wheelchair, has big red glasses.
She's still in the same apartment, though,
yep.
Which is weird because it was a walk-up, so I don't know how she's getting up and down from there in her big, complicated wheelchair.
I mean, Is it the same apartment? Because it might seems be a better much apartment. Larger than her old apartment.
I guess
was.
It maybe it, maybe she did get a big fancy apartment. I don't know how. I guess, but maybe she just won the lottery real quick with her future powers.
Well, I mean, she has so much money. It's why she was able to fly to Peru and back.
Why was she in that crappy apartment in the first place?
Well, it's
then?
All she
just didn't care. Okay,
but now she has three to take care of.
Yeah,
because I guess the parents of all three of these girls went, yeah, you can have them. I
yeah,
don't
it's
give a
fine.
Fuck.
We don't give a shit.
And then we get that aforementioned end of a CW pilot where all four of them are now in costume staring at the camera, arms folded, and are like, you'll definitely see us in another movie.
I really wanted a scene where Anya was like, oh, by the way, could you maybe use your superpowers and infinite money to help with my whole deported dad situation? She's like, I have three daughters.
I looked into the future and no, I can't.
I can't. Sorry. In the future, I didn't want to.
Turns out in the future, no. No, wait a minute. I'm getting a vision. In the future, you get me a Pepsi and shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And then we get the shot of the four of them on a rooftop where Cassandra Webb is floating in a sphere of web potential. And all three of the characters are in their super suits. Because, again, as you probably heard, they do not actually get their superpowers in this movie. They shouldn't. They shouldn't all get them at the same time. They all have different origin stories.
No. And there's no, like, any reason for them to have powers. Because when we get to this point, it's like, all right, and now all three of them are hanging out. They're still not powered, and they're just chilling with Cassie. And you're like, then where the fuck do their powers come from? I thought for sure at one point that fucking Ezekiel Spider would bite them or something, or like Sims's blood gets on them or something would happen.
Yeah, that
but
spider.
No,
that
they just
spider.
End and it's like, I don't know, in the future you'll have powers, but we don't
well,
care
they,
how.
They have to have their real origins. Like Maddie has to participate in some mystical ritual called the Gathering of Five or something and and so on and so forth. They can't all have the correct, I forget what Julia's origin story is.
I don't know, man.
And I don't know the first thing about Anya Corazon, even though I think she's supposed to be like the coolest one of these three.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. That's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
That's
There's
how
no,
it ends.
No post credits.
No post credits. So we are going to get into our bests and worsts now for the film. Jeff, what was the best thing in Madame Web?
I don't really know. It's such a dumb movie. I mean, I guess the fireworks factory scene is kind of a neat set piece just because it's a great place to be someone with future sight.
Yeah.
So I feel like that set piece was kind of fun. I also like the costuming of the three girls where they were like, well, they can't put them in their super suits, but we can put them in, you know, Julia's in a black and white outfit and Maddie's in a red and blue outfit.
Yeah.
And I guess Anya's in red and gold or whatever her actual outfit is supposed to be.
Normally like black and silver.
Okay, sure.
So
hers is confusing. I can't even figure out which one of them is the real. I'm looking at her webpage right now and I can't tell which one of these is the main one.
Great. My favorite thing in this would be, I mean, it's probably also that fucking last fireworks scene, but again, I'm gonna say it's because it's the one point where you got to do anything interesting with Ezekiel Sims.
Mm-hmm.
Him being sort of like Spider-Man without the web shooters of just like, I'm very physically leaping and like,
yeah,
very imposing physically,
sure,
is interesting. Because normally Spider-Man's like, I'm a gangly little teenager and I like flip around and do some web stuff. And I'm like, haha. And if I punch a guy, it's because I have momentum behind it because I had to swing.
Yeah.
But he's just like, oh, I will fucking destroy a dude. I will like jump and leap and grab and murder you.
It's funny to me that that's like the best thing about this movie, because that's just a part of the Spider-Verse movies. And no one would ever say it's the best part because there's so much other good shit going on.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that Miguel or like Spider-Man Noir and so on are just heavier presences.
Yep.
Is just assumed because those movies rule.
Yeah. No, in this, the fact that Sims at least occasionally is interesting is the best part of this.
Yes.
What was the worst part of Madame Web for
geez.
You?
I mean, I don't know. All the
is it brought to you by Pepsi?
It might be the Pepsi product placement. That's pretty strong. I would say maybe the weird, awkward, unnecessary gender sequence with the baby shower.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, what are we doing? This is so badly written. And we
God,
already
that
established
was weird.
It was already established that her mom died in the Amazon and that she's mad about it. We've gotten all that out of the way. We don't need a scene where she has to awkwardly like embarrass herself in front of a group of women we're never going to see again.
Yeah.
This scene is giving nothing.
It's
It only serves to introduce her commanding officer who will die in a few minutes.
It's real weird.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. I guess it also introduces Mary Parker to the movie. So you can get that out of the way. Be like, hey, you know, someday Tom Holland's going to come out of this lady.
Great.
Yeah.
Gross.
Gross. Unpleasant.
Ew. And
your least favorite. Sorry, I should be doing that more regularly.
I know.
I'm tired.
It's a
late night.
You're looking up things on Spider Women's. It's fine.
I was looking right at you when I forgot to say that.
I know.
I do not blame my. It's just because I'm bad at this.
That's fine.
Yep.
My least favorite thing in this has to be that fucking diner scene.
No, it's fucking ridiculous.
The
why do they go dance with boys? What are we doing?
No, it's the fuck up on timing.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
It's the fact that you're like, we've established how visions work, and then you fully fucked it up.
Like, I get it. They're all teenage girls. There's hormones. I get it. But, like, they're all scared shitless. They think they've been abducted and dumped in the woods. And they're not like, maybe we could go ask those boys for help, because we're still kind of trapped in the middle of nowhere.
Well, no, they're like,
let's just go hit on them.
At that point, they were like, no, we are fine with Cassie. We think that she is trying to save us, because obviously Spider-Man tried to murder us.
I don't know how we expect she's going to find us, given that we abandoned that spot in the woods and went to a diner.
Yeah, but they're like, they basically convinced themselves of, oh, we need to go get our own food, and she probably abandoned us. And again, I'm like, if you think you got abandoned, then yeah. Fucking use your phone and call someone.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they also don't know Sims can track them.
They did also throw the one of them that had a cell phone.
They can track that. And she just throws Maddie's phone out, does Cassie. And you're like, you don't know he can do that.
I mean, there's a lot of you don't knows in this movie. Because first of all, she just grabs her phone and throws it out the window. Because they're like, you can track that. And Maddie's like, hey, you can't just throw my phone out a window. And that causes Anya to say, oh, just have your rich daddy buy you another one. And I'm like, how do you know she's rich?
She is in street clothes with a skateboard.
And the two of you have never spoken before.
What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, no, but that diner scene fully pissed me off for the, like, no, you fucked the timing up. You have an audio cue and you fucked it up, and it just makes me so angry.
You're just mad because Toxic was super popular in 2003. You're gonna have to get over it.
Oh, I'm never mad about Toxic. That rules.
It's a good song.
I've seen Britney Spears in concert, sir. Sir, which one of us has seen her live?
I've not seen her live, I gotta be honest.
Thank you.
Yeah. But it is on my jogging playlist. That Toxic, it's got the right BPM for me.
Now we will give the movie a rating from 0 to 5 to give it a total rating out of 10. Jeff, what would you rate Madame Web?
I mean, despite how much of an absolute failure this movie is, it is not an unpleasant watch. It's just boring. For the most part, the worst thing about it is that it's repetitive in the middle because it's got all that deja vu shit. So I think I'm going to go as high as a 2.
Great.
So I'm going to give this a 2 out of 5. That's going to be me. What about you?
I feel like, God, 2.5 feels right, because I think 4.5 is where I would want this to go.
Okay.
It's a little under mediocrity.
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's fine. I have not seen Morbius, I have to be honest.
Neither have I.
So I don't know if it's better or worse than Morbius, which I'm sure is probably the big question on everyone's lips. It is, I would say, better, which is crazy to say, than Venom 2.
I have also not seen Venom 2.
Venom 2 sucks.
I mean, everything that I have seen, I'm like, oh, Sony, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, well, the first Venom movie's fine, but it's just because it's, you know, just let Tom Hardy do whatever he wants.
Oh, yeah. And that one was fine, mostly because people were like, oh, you accidentally put a gay romance into this between Eddie and the symbiote.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, Sony did not want that at all.
That keeps going all the way through the next movie. That's not over. It's just that the movie is only like 79 minutes long, and it doesn't have time for everything it wants to get to.
Yeah. So there you go. 4.5 out of 10 for Madame Web. It is not good.
No, it's definitely deserving the fate it's getting. It's a real shame that Sony is just completely shooting, especially because Spider-Man 4, they've already been like, that's the last one. After that, we're taking Tom Holland back and we're going to make our own Spider-Man.
We're going to make our own Spider-Man.
Please don't.
Oh, God. You know, the second you do, you're going to be like, and here's our new Spider-Man movie, and it will fucking suck. And then everyone will be like, hey, just give it back.
Give it back to Marvel.
Stop it. Stop trying to do things you are bad at.
Yeah.
You're like Fox in 2000. You keep making shit out bad movies for superheroes for no reason.
I feel like we could make the Phoenix Saga work this time.
Stop it. God damn it. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. We will be back in another couple weeks with more Movie Mastery, but until then, if you want more content, you can always support the show by going to patreon.com/systemmastery, and supporting us at any level will help the show, lets us keep doing what we're doing, and any level unlocks extra bonus content for all of our various shows. At the $10 a month level, you unlock everything, including our TV Mastery, where we are wrapping up and doing a retrospective on this last season, where we were, very appropriately, looking at live-action superheroes.
And you know how good my memory is, so how great I'm going to be at a retrospective of anything is sharp. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
Yep.
I can't wait.
Yep.
So you can join us for that, and we'll reveal what we're doing on the next season for TV Mastery.
Oh, good, because I didn't know. I'm excited to hear that.
So join us for that, and if you can't support us financially because, you know, we live in a capitalist hellscape, you can always give us your support through liking, giving us a subscription, hit
that bell. That bell. Guys,
you can buy us a Pepsi. It's the number one choice for America.
Guys, it's 3 a.m., and if this phone number really does connect me to Pennywise the Clown, then you have to like and subscribe. That's just science.
Rate and review and tell people about the podcast.
Please do those things.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back in a couple weeks. You all have a good one.
In the universe of Star Wall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Star Wall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Star Wall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.